Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Art of Tracking Radio Show. Tracking is still alive and well. Join us as we interview master trackers from around the world. We'll hear their stories, their secrets. So tune in and enjoy all you hear. Welcome.
Welcome to the Art of Tracking Radio Show. Today we have Ty Cunningham. Ty Cunningham is a longtime favorite of mine. He's been in the game for a long time. He's actually a renowned martial artist grandmaster, close combat consultant. He's a tactical firearms instructor. And, of course, he is a heck of a man tracker with all kinds of stuff going on. He has a book, and he may have something more to tell us tonight. Ty, are you there?
I am here, sir.
Oh, great. It's great to hear from you again, Ty. How's it been going?
Yeah, things have been good. I'm now retired from the United States Marshals, and so trying to integrate back into the civilian populace with some of my activities. But other than that, you know, it's a learning curve. So, yeah, doing well.
Heck yeah, heck yeah. So, you know, I would love to touch back when we had you before. We talked about your forensic spirology. Could you retouch on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. That was based on a master's thesis that I was mandated to work on when I attended the U.S. Army Command and General Staff College back in 2010. And so forensic spirology is the study of human behavior through footprint evidence. And spirology, of course, the root word spoor just means that, you know, a track or a track way of man or animal. And there are ology is just the study of, and so I built that neologism so that I could work that into a science. It wasn't being talked on directly. Every tracker reads behavior at various levels, but there was nothing written scientifically that actually showed the data of how that actually happens. So when you're working with the courts in particular, you can't just walk into court and say, you got to take my word for it. This is what I see. And unless you're a tracker, I'm sorry, you're just not capable of understanding this stuff. You can't do that. And so the Marshal Service, I was the national selectee for the whole country to go to the command college. And it was there that I got special permission from the graduate office to do field examinations to collect data based on what all trackers know to be true, and then built that science so that we would actually have research that delineates what we all know happens when we follow a trail of man or animal and just how that takes place. So that's what the forensic spirology is. And it's a 208-page thesis, which is pretty large for the command college. And I received one of the 16 distinguished graduate awards for this thesis out of a student body of 1,000 military officers throughout the world. So
it was precedent-setting
work. And I've just recently published the work so that there's a hard copy for people. Instead of, you can go online and get it for free, download it if you want it that way, but now I've actually put it in print. So those people who want to spend, I can't remember what it is, like $14 or whatever.
Well, you know, the book is
Yeah, the book is always a little better. You know, a PDF, you can hop online and look at it, but it's nice to have it sitting there on your coffee table with a bookmark, you know. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I figured that, and I had so many people saying, Ty, you need to get this thing published, you need to have it out there, you need to... Well, it's been out there in PDF form, but I said, well, let's get it done. I've kept it as clean as I could. I have not altered it. I have not, because the research needs to stay the way it is. I didn't want to write it in more easy reading kind of thing, because I thought that would take away from the essence of what I was trying to do through the research. So I left it intact and then just published it. And so it's got a pretty cool cover, U.S. Marshal Star, and then Forensic Sporology on there. And
that's actually outstanding, you know, because it's actually almost, it can be used as what you're saying, almost legally for police and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, you know, anytime you're working on a thesis, you're dealing with a theory. And practice is a lot different than theory. But when you're talking about science, the scientific method is what's holding when you talk about a profession. And so within a profession, you have certain vocabulary that describes the actual application. You have to do it in accordance with the law. And so a lot of the research in the thesis really touches on what the law is in reference to specialized and expert testimony, what the standard is, and that this then can be used by any tracker who might testify in court to say, when they said, yes, I was trailing this particular criminal or whatnot, and this is the behaviors that I saw in the footprint, and someone might objection, there's no way to know. There's no scientific basis for this to say somebody could read human behavior in a footprint. And then instead of a tracker saying, well, this is what I do all the time, so you have to take my word for it, they could actually go back and say, well, there was work done at the command college on this very issue. This is the science behind it, and this is how I can actually understand the behavior of this person by reading their footprints. And so it does give some, but, you know, like any science, though, you want to keep doing research to make the science better, and that's not being done. There's just not that many people out there with, you know, a master's or PhD interested in taking what I've started and going out and continuing the research on this particular subject. There's just, if you look at the world population, there are just not that many trackers. And so
that's true.
And you can't just take someone who has a PhD in, let's say, you know, neurology. He has no emic view of what a tracker does. He would have to learn tracking by going to different schools, school himself up, get very good at it, and then apply science to it so that he could actually then go and evaluate the research and then try and improve upon the research. And we always, in science, we work with the negative, right? We're trying to disprove what we have before us.
Right.
You know, I'm going to go out and take the available research, and I'm going to try and see the flaw in it so that I can make it better. And no one really has stepped up to do that. That's what this theory is all about, this science of being able to read human behavior and footprint evidence. And eventually, when the skill level gets high enough in the scientific community, then I think more people would be interested in moving the science forward, just like in any other science. But until that happens,
because you can't just go to college and, hey, I'm going to go to college and I'm going to get my PhD in sporology. That's not going to happen, see?
Right, right.
So it's really brand spanking new, and really it might take 200-300 years before it really seats itself like any science, you know? Like on
that's
the other
really
side,
cool.
the human combative behavior side of my expertise in hoplology has really only been around since the middle 1800s. I mean, it may stretch back further, but it was canonized in 1800. So, and it really hasn't even made that big of a splash in the academic community, even to this day. So that's 100+ years. So sporology may be the same way. Trackers, well, there'll always be trackers in whatever venue, whether it's tactical combat, search and rescue, wildlife, scientific type things, dealing with animals. We're always going to have tracking because everyone definitely sees the value of the skill as an application. The science of it takes a little bit more work in terms of time than just going out and using it tomorrow. But I had to have this because my work inside the Marshal Service, that's the question, the hard questions that Marshal Service management asked me was, well, what's the science behind this? Well, yeah. Right now, there really isn't any. And then they're like, well, how do you sell that to the courts? You know, there are some trackers out there who have testified in court. But the problem is the trackers that go to court, they have to say, well, I've been doing this a long time. It's my experience, and you have to take my word for it. And we have to try and educate a jury or the judge, if it's a bench trial, on what this science is, you know, what this specialized skill is. This research basically lays the foundation, or at least the footings, so that somebody can come eventually, and it might be me a little later. There's a lot of questions raised by the thesis that I still need to answer. And so perhaps I might dive into some more detailed research on this particular science in the coming years. But my big thing right now is certification. For me, that's a big deal because the Marshal Service would not let me operate without it.
Okay, so you're talking about some sort of government style certification?
Correct. They had me research starting back in 1997 all the available data around the world from all tracking programs that were available at that time, which really there weren't that many. And then postulate and canonize a certification standard that the Marshal Service management could rely on to test the scout trackers that were in this scout tracker units. And so I had to find everything I possibly could at that time and then put it into something that would work inside the United States Marshal Service and then, of course, sell that through multiple cases to the federal court. And the Marshal Service works real close with the federal courts in every district. We are the action arm or the enforcement arm of the federal courts. And so any orders that come from the courts, warrants, so hunting fugitives, to just serving of papers and so forth, anything the court needs done comes to the Marshal Service. So we have a close relationship to them. So it dealt with me going to the judges, going to the U.S. Attorney's Office, looking at the standard of the law, and how that would happen if the Marshal Service goes out and starts working these cases that
are primarily brought about through tracking evidence. So this spoor evidence, how is the court, what is needed so the court can rely on this as doctrine from the Marshal Service? And so that's really the impetus on what took place eventually in 2010, around 2009, when I actually got selected from the Marshal Service to go to the Command College. And then put this, now that I was out of the tracking units and now I'm in upper level management, my military equivalent rank was Lieutenant Colonel, and so they wanted me to go and actually put this to paper. And unfortunately, it was really late in my career, and as soon as I finished, you know, this school and all this research, I was only in the Marshal Service another year, and then I retired. And so the backing, this thesis backing for what I did previous, clear back to 1997, is really all encapsulated in this, what I call government tracker program now, because it came from the government.
Wow. That's a lot, man. You were a marshal, and you have a lot going on with martial arts. Is anything new going on with the martial arts?
Well, you know, we like in society to separate a lot of entities into qualitative and quantitative things that make it easier for us to look at them. You know, I started the martial arts as a three-year-old boy with my father. He was a sergeant first class in the Army Guard, infantryman. And so he started me in his combatives and this martial arts stuff, and it kind of grew with me my whole life. But it really had a combatives edge. So you're talking from more of a military, dealing with real bad guys all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that had an effect on my future professions. I'm positive of it. But yes, there were martial art, belt rankings, and so forth to a smaller degree. But it was really based on what you can actually apply dealing with a bad guy. And so we separate these things out. Yes, I've got the martial art thing going on. I've got the tracking thing going on. I've got survival things going on. And yet, to me, it really comes down to two basic sciences. One is spoorology, which is the study of human behavior and footprint evidence. And
yes,
the other is hoplology, which is human combative behavior.
Oh.
From an emic point of view, and emic meaning inside, I've been doing the martial arts my whole life. Well, I shouldn't say that, minus 3 years. Still a long time, over 50 years. So we won't say how old I am. And then, so those two sciences really drive everything else. And within those sciences, yeah, I break things pragmatically down into tracking, survival, and defense programs. And so now I teach my federal martial combatives as the main impetus, and I am the historian for my father's martial arts system, which is the Alaska Kempo Jiu-Jitsu system. And I try and work in that arena to try and log the history of this Alaskan system. But when it comes down to the brass tacks of this whole thing, you're talking about, it's real simple. I can hunt men, so I'm a man hunter. That means I'm a man tracker. I use the footprints that I use to understand behavior. I find my prey, and then when I find them, I have to be able to deal with them, and that's where all the martial art comes in, or the combat is, or the extreme close quarter combat contact. You got to be able to deal with them. If they resist, they don't want to play, they don't want to come friendly. And so you have to deal with them. And then in the meantime, where this all operates, whether it's urban, Arctic,
boreal forests, rainforests, deserts. It doesn't matter. You've got to be able to survive in any of those environments. Whether you get cut off from your support, whatnot, you've got to go back to the basics of survival. And so that's really the tracking survival and defense broken down pragmatically. But I, you know, having a master's degree, that means my education is in these two sciences, and I use, and really survival, except, yeah, you got to learn the skills of being able to build a fire, make shelter, you know, procure food,
yeah,
and so forth. Get yourself out, build signal, and so forth. But aside from that, really it comes down to psychology, how the human body responds under stress. And that's the science side of it. When you look at footprints, what are you really seeing? Are you just seeing a print? A lot of people can look at prints and go, hey, there's a footprint. We recognize that, hey, there's a footprint. But it goes beyond that. So you have to understand really what is called micro-tracking in the greater tracking world. And you have to understand the macro side of tracking, which is more the tactical, the combat, the, you know, the mission essential stuff,
yeah,
search and rescue, research, and so forth. But the micro side of it has to deal with diving into the behavior of this person psychologically. And can you do that effectively or not?
That's incredible.
It I sounds know, like you. Right.
No, I want to keep on this, but what I'm hearing is that you have been immersed in them so long, all of that, that it's just part of you and it's integrated into you, and that's just who you are.
Well, I mean, we all. I mean, our experiences are a great modifier to our behavior. The deeper it's seated in what is called primary movement patterns, like walking, none of us think about walking anymore. We get up, we just start walking. Our body has been doing it so long that it's rooted genetically within us. So there's science behind this primary movement pattern. Secondary movement patterns are all the things that we have to learn based on primary movement patterns. So dancing, even though it has to deal with how we are ambulatory, how we move, and that movement is something that we then have to cognitively, with our forebrain, think about to build neurosynaptic memory or habits so that those can be rooted so deep that we can operate without using our forebrain to think about it anymore. And so the longer anybody does a particular experience, the more rooted then it gets, the deeper it gets into their neural memories, where when they have to respond, they choose these memories to act out instead of having to use their forebrain, which takes a lot more energy. And you can see that between walking, which is a primary movement pattern, and dancing, just as an example, which is a secondary movement pattern.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah. So we all have to do that at varying levels. You take a brand new tracking student, a brand new combative student, a brand new shooter. It doesn't matter what physical endeavor you want to do, you have to go through this process. And so the faster you understand the science of the process, then the more you want to practice to build this neural memory, the faster you will get it down. You know, someone goes to a tracking course, they spend, you know, 50 hours working on this course, but they only do maybe they only go out on Saturday and follow a couple trails and then they're done, and that's all they do, they're not going to be as far along as someone who has to follow a trail every day. or multiple times every day. And so back in 1997, when I linked up with Linda Hunter to build the International Society of Professional Trackers, the whole concept was that we would now make an organization that would allow everyone to have a standard of professionalism, regardless of whether they were paid for tracking or they volunteered for tracking. Because whether you get paid or not is irrelevant. It's how much time you spend in experience using your skill in that particular endeavor of tracking that makes you good at it. And then I have always pushed, you need to keep a logbook of all your experiences so that that log data of every one of your trails, whether it's practice or whether it's a call out for search and rescue, or whether you walk into a crime scene as an investigator, or whether you're a police on patrol and you're dealing with an abandoned vehicle looking at footprint evidence, if everyone went back and logged everything that they did in a logbook, then certification becomes easy, because now we can qualify people based on their past experience with then some form of a test to meet a standard. And that's kind of where I'm at now. Here shortly, within the next, month or so, a logbook that I have put together and used throughout my career is going to be in book form, available to the public and all trackers.
Oh, that's great.
They can now have this standard that they can carry around with them, write everything down that they do, put endorsements in there, memorandums, letters of thanks from sheriffs, or if they went out dealing with animals for 3 months, maybe mountain lions in the Colorado Rockies, doing a scientific research of data, they could actually take and apply that and put all that inside this logbook, so that when they went to certification on the wildlife side or the human side, they pull out their logbook, we can see their experience, we can see everyone that they've worked for, we can now qualify as well as quantify what that looks like in their experience to see, oh, they should be at this level, this should be the test that they're taking, and so forth.
And that's excellent, man. That is excellent. Now, I've heard and possibly even seen a new book that you've put out.
Are you speaking of the Scout Tracker guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting. This is actually the skeleton of a manual that the Marsh Service had me put together for the Scout Tracker units. And so now I've had to kind of sterilize it, take out a lot of the U.S. Marshals language, and put in the government tracker stuff, my Scout Tracking stuff into it.
Wow.
And make it available. And it's really trailing and surveillance concepts for scouting and law enforcement. And the difference between scout tracking and tactical or combat type tracking dealing with men is scout tracking, you're not trying to make contact.
Right.
So you're ghosting a trail, collecting data, feeding it to a command structure. That command structure is making decisions and feeding it back to the field and using their various assets to use the information that a tracking team is putting together for the commander, so the commander then can take down using a heavy team, a SWAT team, or some kind of a hunter-killer team in the military to deal with, you know, a tracking element is rather small, at least it definitely was, and since this context is really more of a law enforcement context, where we own the ground, and we're going out, we're trying to put eyes on bad guys doing bad things, and I never wanted my team to actually make contact. Of course, there's immediate action drills in case you're compromised and, you know, how to deal with a tactical issue since we're law enforcement, we're tactical guys anyways. But scout tracking is mastering the skills of being a ghost in nature. Using tracking as your way of collecting actionable intelligence to get back to a chain of command who can make decisions on what to do with the information that you're pulling off the trail. So that's what this book is.
I love that. I'm going to grab one as soon as I can. To me, the most important aspect of tracking is actual trailing. You know, there's a lot of different subjects within the tracking world, but to me, trailing is the most important.
Well, I mean, it depends what you're wanting to accomplish. Trailing for military, for law enforcement, for search and rescue is pretty pervasive. I mean, I've got to find a body somehow, whether I need to kill it or whether I need to arrest it or whether I need to save it. I mean, you've got to follow the trail. And so the majority of the trails out there, I'll be honest, the majority of the trails that I have ever been on have been cold. It's very rare that you have a hot trail. Because even if someone, like I was out after a fugitive who's living up in the mountains, aging is the most critical skill for a tracker. If you cannot age correctly, you cannot track correctly. Because I could look at moist ground with a track in it and think, wow, this is fresh. And yet it may be 3 days old. So I'm following a three-day-old trail of this person that I'm after. I would consider that a cold trail, you see.
Yeah.
I mean, a hot trail to me, I would age and I'd say, hey, listen, man, I'm 2 hours minus. Right? This guy's still walking in the very trail that I'm following.
Yeah.
So there is a grave difference. And it could be all this evidence, this footprint evidence, could be from the same guy who's lived up there for 6-7 months. Well, if you can't age exactly the freshest one, so I'm following the most current one to actually get the most current data from on what the behavior of this trail is giving me from this quarry, then I'm really following something that is not going to lead me quickly to any end if I can't age correctly. So, and I believe that is one of the hardest things for a tracker to learn. It's the hardest thing because that is time intensive. You have to basically live on a trail for a long period of time, seeing how everything in nature affects a trail, giving a particular terrain, situation, circumstance, environment on this particular trail, that takes months and years of being able to build that kind of experience. And so, are you a casual tracker or are you truly a professional to the point where you're out there to master your skill so that it can be useful in time of need? There is a difference.
Big difference, yeah.
Yeah, there's a difference. So I made sure, so what people are going to read in this particular book is really the A to Z of what a scout tracker working on a government standard of certification has to know in order to apply his trade professionally. And that doesn't necessarily mean inside government, but this is the standard that this particular agency inside the government with the courts, because the courts would call my boss, the U.S. Marshal appointed by the president, and say, hey, I need Ty to go out and do this.
Wow. So
and what you're doing, I mean, that's the relationship between the U.S. Marshals and the federal court. And we're responsible for security of all federal judges, from the Supreme Court all the way down to a magistrate in every district. And so we're constantly out doing security studies of property, you know, how people can get in and harm our judges and so forth. So not only is it a practical thing for the courts dealing with expert testimony in court on a case, but you're all, you know, we are also spent lots of time doing things for the courts because that was our job professionally. So
yeah,
this scout tracker guide is what we did as the scout trackers for the U.S. Marshal Service.
Wow.
It's voluminous to say the least, but it has it has everything in there, from the simple understanding of what, you know, tracking is, to how to see 8 rules of tracking, to how to think about a trail, how to receive a trail. So it deals with pre-trailing checklists. It deals with our uniform scale format, how to log all the data down on usable forms.
Taking up lost trails, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. The lost trail, or what they say, lost spoor procedures.
Yeah.
I came up in my research and built what's called the Tracker's Triangle, which I went and ran a bunch of research on, collecting data. And when someone uses the Tracker's Triangle, they eliminate lost trail procedures or lost spoor procedures. They keep the trails 74% of the time. And so you're only looking at 26% of running lost trail procedures when you need to. So if you have this Tracker's Triangle and it's a mental model for you to use, you really will never lose a trail 74% of the time. You'll maintain the trail.
That's awesome. Heck yeah.
It takes a lot of work.
That's more bait for people to buy that book.
Sounds
great.
There's a lot of great tracking books out there. Everyone has their experience, which is so valuable, and I read every single one of them. You know, a scientist does not really have an ego so much, because we spend so much time dealing with data, raw data, and the data itself speaks what truth is, you know, the facts in that particular data set that you're collecting. And so between the forensic spoorology, which is the science of man tracking, and this particular book, the Scout Tracker Guide, which really is the application of man tracking as the U.S. Marshal standard, between those two, it really gives the good backing to anyone who would want to, with everything else that's written out there. I think that science is so darn important, because that's how we see our world. Everything is done in a scientific way. And so we've really got to understand that. And if you read Louis Liebenberg's work.
Yeah.
His theory is that tracking is the origin of science.
Yep, that's exactly what it says.
So, reading through his work, laying down how our minds operate as human beings, right?
Yeah.
Would build great precedence then for this particular science today of forensic spirology. I just basically took all the data I could, and it focuses on one thing. Does a particular spore chain signature or gait footfall sequence that any human would lay down in their own movement, will it glean human behavior? Trackers talk about it all the time. They process in their mind that way. They collect the data. They see enough data, and pretty soon they start getting a mental picture of the behavior that laid it, what the person was doing, when they did it, how they did it, what they were doing it for.
Right.
But there was nothing written showing that science of how we see that on paper, how that data is processed in our mind. I just took all that, ran field tests, logged the data, wrote the thesis as my theory on how that happens.
I
built the science.
Yes. That's awesome.
That's all I've done.
I read some of it. I have to tell you, I didn't get to finish it, but now my interest is once again piqued.
Well, what it's going to do is it's going to just open up your mind to what Liebenberg proffers in his theory, is that our minds are hardwired to work this way. And so it opens up all the possibilities to anyone who would then want to understand how their mind's working when they look at this spore evidence.
Wow. Ty, that is incredible stuff, man. It's deep. What else? Anything that you would like to... say besides these very serious and in-depth things that you got my mind reeling, really?
Well, you know, I the thing that I enjoy the most about trackers is the majority of trackers out there are very, very reasonable thinkers about things. And they don't have egos. They're willing to train from anybody to increase their skills. They're willing to ask questions. This is the scientific process, right? We want to know. And if we don't know something, we say we don't know yet. We write it down and we start looking for data to either prove or disprove. We naturally build our own hypothesis in our thinking. This is what I believe happened here. When every tracking school on the man tracking side, when every school does tracking pits or spore pits, what they're trying to teach students is the ability to interpret what can be seen. And so we want in our minds to be better at this scientific process. When we can actually quantify and qualify data that are just coming into our minds, it makes sense to us because that's how we operate mentally. I think, however, that trackers don't necessarily look at themselves as professional as they should. We all do a lot more training than we actually go out and apply things for real in that context. We go out and we want to see, we want to know. But really, that process, whether you're training or whether it's real, is the same. Our mind does not know the difference between a trail in training and a trail for real, except that we go, oh, I'm working, this is real. Oh, I'm out here training, it's not real. We tell ourselves that. But if we would look at our training and say, listen, this person took off, what am I trying to understand in this trail? So if tracking instructors would start building scenarios for their track makers, write the scenario, give it to your role player, and have the role player acting out this particular role, they would glean better trackers.
That's a really great, really great exercise there, yeah. Wow.
I mean, that instead of just, yeah, run out there, you know, 2-3 miles and just sit down and wait, we'll be there in a minute.
I've been on that trail, Ty.
Instead of that concept, what I had to do for my tractor, because the standard in the Marshal Service was scenario-based, I had to create these scenarios, and so all of our role players would take off, whatever it might be. Hey, this is a lost hunter. So we'd drop this role player up there in a place where they didn't know where the heck they were at. we give them a way to signal and get a hold of us, but they basically are trying to find their way out from this place. They build a camp, then they work from this camp, they got to try and go up in the mountain, then they're trying to find their way back to camp, they can't, they get disoriented, so they're playing this part. So now when you're on this trail, everything you see is what's really going on inside this person's mind, because they're playing this part.
Yeah, it's real. Yeah.
It's a real trail because they're acting out this behavior. And when we see the behavior in the trail, now the trail has meaning because we've set up that particular trail that way. We could build a crime scene and do this. We could have a dead body laying over there. We could have an abandoned vehicle. But that person is not just going to abandon the vehicle and take off. They have many things they have to do in this particular abandoned vehicle. And then the tracker has to really solve this trail when they're on it. What behavior am I learning from this? Now the interpretation of the spore pit has more meaning, because basically what you're on is a huge trail. That's a huge spore pit. It's a real trail.
Yes. It's all a big mystery. It's a detective story.
Yeah, it's real. I mean, when wildlife trackers go out into the wild, when they do that, they're looking at real trails. These animals are about their business. And they've got to decipher, one, the type of animal, and then what is it's exactly doing. And on the man side, it's simple. Yeah, he's walking. He's going that way. So we could pick up simple things like how many of them, what's the direction to travel. You know, what are they doing? Are they carrying any equipment? Or just the simple things. But then the hardest thing in training is to recreate the truth of a real trail. And so if tracking instructors do not do that, I think they're doing a disservice to their trackers. Now, yes, the actual mechanics of following a trail, we do every time we go to a tracking course. We play these mechanics out. But when you look at increasing skill to a standard of more of the journeyman, expert, or master levels of tracking, you'll see that when you get up in those, it changes from mechanics at the beginning, the apprentice stage, into the journeyman stage, which is really just dealing with systematics, right? I'm applying system to the trail. So as I apply this system, it is very, very, very mechanical. As I start getting into my ability to project on the trail, to actually get into the head of my quarry, to actually know what their behaviors are, what they're thinking, how they're moving, and then be able to go and project where they could go based on what I'm reading on the trail. This is a lot of art. So
wow.
Tracking schools teach a lot of the science, the mechanics of tracking. But a lot of schools never really get their students to the place in time where they're making it an art based on the science. So when you talk about the art and science of tracking, we spend so much time on the science side of it, just trying to diagnose a trail, that it's only if you've done this for years and years and years you begin to see a trail and your mind just starts thinking like the person who actually laid the trail. That takes years of work, and you're not going to find that in a tracking school, because in a lot of ways it's not qualifiable, really. But you can see it in testing. And that's why I think that certification in the form of testing, not necessarily attending a lot of schools, when you test your skill to a standard, you then begin to see the art poke out in some of these trackers. Because now, some of these scenarios on the trail, you can't just use science. So science is the background of how you think about things. But at the advanced levels on some of these tests, these examinations in the field, you get to see the journeyman in somebody, or the expert in someone, or the master level in someone, how they use the art of tracking to overlay the science, and they actually diagnose these trails in a way that really you have to just sit back and be impressed, right? You can't go, well, that's six steps that you've actually diagnosed. You know, you have the spore examination side where they may have to deal with, 70 different types of footprints out there, trails, what's going on. Then you have all these scenarios that they have to diagnose. And pretty soon you start seeing their experience come out in the art.
Wow. That is freaking awesome, man.
And I wish we could get to that level, and I think that's where I'll be focusing most of my time, trying to get other tracking instructors to see the value of it, which they may or may not. But as a scientist, that's where I'm at. That's where I've been for since the Marshall Service required me to do it. And I think it built better trackers, because we had to. We had no choice.
Yeah.
You want to be in this unit, this is the standard. And unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, once I researched everything, wrote up the proposal, and gave it to Marshall's management, the first thing they said was, okay, Ty, you've got to apply this to yourself first to see if this is going to fly or not. So I had to go out there and do this myself, which is unnerving. Anytime you have to put yourself to something that's uncomfortable like that. But I,
sure.
You know, honestly, to know where you are at to a particular standard is kind of a good thing.
Yeah.
Everybody can, everyone that I know can track mechanically. They're good at it. But it's only someone who's used this within their profession because they had to. Right? They had to. You see the art start peeking out really, really, really big. That is where it's at. And but to get to art, you have to get through the science. You have to master the science of it. And then, and only then, do you start really branching out into the art.
Okay, Ty, real quick. Real quick, sir. I'm absolutely enthralled with everything you've been saying. Take a second and give, because this is something that we've been talking about in our circle. Define the art of tracking. Give it any kind of definition you want, because we've all been working on this ourselves.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let me. I just want to get in here and check something out.
Take your time.
Something. No, I wrote something down the other day. I think I saw your. I think I saw that post.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about. We all do. We see. I'm so thankful for Facebook and some of these that we just saturate each other with everything that's going on. I appreciate that. That's the science side of me.
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
Go ahead. Go ahead.
The last 5 minutes of what you were just saying were just absolutely awesome, and I really appreciate that. I really do. I felt like I was being talked to by an elder that was beyond my knowledge, and that. That's, you know, I don't always get to hear that, so that was nice.
Well, thank you. I just, you know, sometimes I just have a different look about things just because of the way my mind operates and things. But this is, I think I saw that post because I started thinking of some of the work that Liebenberg has done, Elbrock, some of these other great animal trackers. Looking into the history, you know, I spent a lot of time dealing with things around ancient civilizations, cultures, native legends, and so forth. Looking at that just because of my background educationally, living amongst the natives of Alaska my whole life. I'm leaving here this week to go up and spend, you know, 2 weeks with Inupiat kids up in the Northwest Arctic School District. I spent a lot of time with them, hear their stories. And so I understand these ancient ways, and they have meaning for me. And here's my take on the art of tracking. If you look at let me back up. There's not that much written work in the tracking world that delves into the science and art of ancient ways like this from a tracking perspective, really. So when I had to dig up every living thing that existed on the planet when I was working on my thesis, it really wasn't that voluminous. So in looking at all that data, I believe that we could separate the science of tracking from the art when we start using imagination over cognitive thought, right? So if I lay out cognitive science, in other words, I'm trying to qualify and quantify things, we're talking about the science of tracking. Anytime that you start using the process of imagination, art, abstract things that you can't qualify or quantify very easily, you are in the realm of art. And so in tracking terms, when you start projecting a trail, as Liebenberg would isolate the levels, when you start projecting, you start crossing over from science and you start bleeding into art. Because now I'm taking what the science is telling me on the ground and I'm overlaying all my experience from my past onto this trail, and I'm trying to project something in the future that may not have happened yet, based on the science that I'm reading.
That's intense.
You see how it bleeds into art?
Yes.
And then let me stay there. Let me stay in that arena a little bit, because I have, you know, notes. I'm pulling out notes now. I'm trying to pick my brain. Here we go. So, if you go beyond any empirical evidence where you're anticipating or you're dealing with imagination or preconcepts, you're talking about bleeding into art. So when you look at possibilities, whether you can confirm them or refute them, you're looking like you're bleeding into art. If at some point you confirm your expectations, this does not necessarily imply that your hypothesis, which is science, is correct. Because later you could still prove them to be incorrect. So you're starting to bleed into art when these kind of things are happening. And we, as trackers, when we start getting to this area, this is where we start shooting ourselves in the foot a lot of times, because we start getting unsure of what we're feeling in relation to the science. So we get feedback, and if it's negative, we start to place a lot of weight on that negative. But science is about this feedback loop. And so if we project things out there as possibilities of what we could expect based on our thoughts and our imaginations, and they come back negative, we can't say, well, that's the end of it. I'm done. I can't figure this out. I don't know what's going on. The science isn't, I'm running out of ideas and so forth. We stop ourselves, and we shouldn't, because this is all part of the process of blending science and art. So we have to look at the spore evidence, and we have to automatically, we're going to build hypothesis, which is science. And then you are really in this area of hypothetical with deductive reasoning. Can you kind of see that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's where we start bleeding over into art. Now, the last level that Liebenberg proffers to all of us, and all my data does not does not refute this. It actually supports this, is when somebody at a level, up in the senior master levels, can perpetuate by blending all three, from simplistic to systematic to projective type, they're using art. So I may take, and I may have been on thousands of trails. There's no way for me to sit there and think about all the details on each one of those thousand trails. It's just an impossibility. They all blend together.
Yes.
So art then would take the basics of science, or the scientific method, the way our minds are hardwired to process deductive reasoning, and we're going to start then formulating based on mission tasks, right?
Yes.
Because we have objectives. Without an objective, you're actually really not processing correctly, because a hypothesis is a delineated look at what you think the objective should be, right?
Yes, sir.
In a form of some kind of a question. So I evaluate that mission, and then I start using things like, out of those thousand trails, my instinct, my intuitive senses, based on what I see in my environment with the trail, the quarry, when it becomes second nature, where I don't process science cognitively anymore, it's so deep-rooted, kind of like my primary movement pattern, right, we talked about earlier. When it's so deep-rooted that the science and art blends together and it becomes who I am, I look at this trail and I automatically see everything overlaid on this trail based on the input into my mind and the output that my mind projects. Then
we're in
the area of art.
Wow. I'm honored right now, really, sir.
Well, hopefully that makes sense. This is the way my mind works all the time. I would not say that I'm necessarily right all the time, because I constantly question every hypothesis, trying to collect data to refute what I've got going on to see if it will stand. But it's the only one I know. And so when you guys put that whole art thing over Facebook, it just made me think of some of the notes I've taken over the years based on reading everybody's stuff. And of course, I favor the scientific method, because I believe that's how we're all hardwired mentally anyways. We create this process, even though we may not call it the science words. But if you look how a human mind works, we all do it. We all go through this process. We all use science. We build hypotheses. We ask questions. And we try and see if the questions will withstand the data. Then we repitch another hypothesis. I mean, we do it anyway. So we just need to make sure, I believe, that we understand that cognitively, so that we can put form to the way our mind's working without just calling it, well, that, you can't go into court and say, you just got to take my word for it. You can't do that. Because if it can't be testable, by other people. If other people can't see it, feel it, you know, so they can look at the evidence and, you know, see what facts are there, then it's not going to withstand the standard that would be necessary from a scientific point of view. And it has to be best case. So you've got to look at standards across the board. And in tracking, I believe, even though they're not written, we pretty much now, over the last 30 years or so, really have the standard pretty much laid out, even though each program, each instructor may look at something a little different. The underlying doctrine of tracking is pretty solidified. If you took away all the business side of things, I could go to 10 different tracking classes, and pretty much they're going to be using the same types of doctrine, you know. So we can actually rely on that, and so can the courts. And I just kind of laid it out as a science to try and help everyone out. Some people may say I've overstepped my bounds, but I can't. I'm a scientist.
Well, I guarantee we are all honored and privileged to know you and to know that you have done this. It sounds like it's incredibly difficult work. So I can't wait to get back into it. It's something I know I need to do. Real quick.
Yeah.
Thinking back. And it doesn't matter if it's man or animal, because I know you were, even as a child, you were tracking. What is one of your favorite tracking stories of all time?
Favorite tracking stories? That's good. Well, I'll tell you what my favorite tracking story. I had a call from a county in western Wyoming where they needed to find a particular piece of evidence, which was a firearm, a shotgun. And the person who stole the police vehicle and the shotgun took him on this chase clear up into the back country till he hit a two-track, and then high-centered the patrol rig and then took off running, pitched the firearm, and they eventually arrested him 3 miles down the road. Helicopter came in, and tons of searchers looking for every swinging thing. The contamination was just extreme. And so they called me as a last resort and saying, "Guy, we got to find this firearm, or we can't pin the firearm on him as pointing it at the officer and threatening his life." So I got with the marshal and chief deputy, and they're requesting our assistance. They gave me the green light to go. We drove over there, got there mid-morning. I had a tracking dog meet me. We'd been working with this dog. His name was Moose. So I had Moose and his handler meet me over there. I picked her up. I picked her up and her dog, I think. We went over there. And so we started looking at the scene, took me out to the scene. The vehicle, of course, now has been taken away, and all I'm left to see, all the bodies are gone, and all I see are thousands and thousands and thousands of footprints everywhere from this vehicle.
Oh, my God.
And so I said, "Okay, detective, tell me how this all played out." Now, this is where the art comes in, right? This is more of, I need the details of everything that surrounds this as opposed to anything else, right?
Yes.
So I need, which way did he take off from the vehicle? Well, he ran this way and went up on the hill over there. And did you follow him on his track? I mean, did you take off after him? No, we went this way. And we tried to cut him off up there on top. So I said, you know, where do these trails converge? How many people are with you right now? You know, there's 12 guys running with me. He's running up this way. Where's all the other people? They're all crime scene people dealing with the vehicle and looking for weapons around this area. So how far did you go? Oh, three miles up that way. How did you make the arrest? Well, we brought a helicopter in, and helicopter kind of pinned his location, and we eventually, you know, fell upon him and made the arrest. How many people were at the arrest, the actual physical arrest? There was three of us, law enforcement, and him. That was it. I said, really? I said, take me to the end. I want to start there.
Yeah.
And he's like, to the end? What the heck? So we took a wide berth 3 miles up there. Where'd the helicopter land? Right there. Okay, everyone just kind of back off. Give me some time now to just... What were you guys wearing? We're wearing, you know, this kind of boot, that kind of boot. You remember what he's wearing? No, I don't remember. So I, of course, go out there. And now so the science comes in, right? So you start looking at the footprints. You start eliminating whose footprints are whose. Because you have a small sample. I have three officers and I have one bad guy. So you eventually eliminate the officer's footprints. You find the footprints that are the bad guys. And now I said, okay, detective, I have to be back tomorrow to court. 5.5-hour drive. So you've got to watch every swing and thing I do because you're going to be the one doing it so that when we find this shotgun, you can go testify in court exactly what you did. He said, all right, I'll try. I said, and you're going to have to do it in reverse. What? So this was a huge, long back trail admission, right? So I start using micro tracking to teach this guy, and I'm basically teaching a tracking course.
Yeah.
So I'm teaching this guy the science of following this footprint, the nuances of the footprint, reverse inside stride or outside stride, pitch, straddle, trough. I mean, all the science of it, right?
Yes, sir.
So I teach him all this stuff, and we go almost 3 miles back this vehicle. Now we're in the dark, so we're using headlamps, torches, and we get to a point, I'm like, listen, I've got to get back. So here's what you need to do. It's pitch dark. We've marked the last known track right here. Nobody's going to step on it. No one's even going to come out here. Tomorrow, detective, you've just spent the last 8.5 hours with me. And I've taught you how to do this. So tomorrow you're going to come back and you're going to go from this last known track in reverse, exactly the way we've done it, over to the vehicle. And if that shotgun is out here, you'll find it. Look, you know, the doubt. How can you be sure? Because you just tracked this guy in reverse the last, you know, almost 3 miles. You didn't think that could happen. You did it. So tomorrow you come back out, you've got another 40 yards, it'll be done. So I drive home, get up the next day, no kidding, he calls me, I found the shotgun. And I'm like, see, I told you could do it. So I think that, just seeing the elation in that detective when he knew that he had done something that he felt was an impossibility was an epic moment for me. Now, I've been on tons of trails, dozens, hundreds, that I'm the one doing all that, you know. But the elation goes out because it's all business for me, right? It's me on the trail. I have a mission. I've got to bust this out, and I have to wrap this thing up, and I have to get it back to court in one fashion or another. And I don't have time to play around or games or anything else. It's business. Seeing that phone call and having him just elated kind of lighten my day. It was, you know what, if more people would take this science seriously, not just a pastime, but a true skill, they could walk into any scenario and command the trail.
Ty, that is a pretty outstanding, man.
But you have to literally believe in what you are doing without question. Because tracking, our minds will destroy us.
Right.
Our minds are our worst enemy. But you have to believe so strongly in your capability with this art and science that it doesn't matter the scenario. And there, I have so many different ones. I'm driving through Yellowstone National Park with my partner. We see what looks like four or five people carrying huge bags of obsidian from obsidian cliffs. And so we pull over, we call the rangers, hey, meet us up here. These people come walking into the area, hey, where's all the obsidian? Well, we don't have any obsidian. You hold them right here. I'll be right back. You take off up there. You cut the trail off the hardball. You follow this back, you know, 200 yards. You find all the obsidian. You pick up the obsidian. You bring it back. Biggest obsidian theft case in national park history, 97 pounds.
Holy mackerel. Wait, you're not allowed to get obsidian off of state parks?
No. Yeah, you better stop that.
I always buy it, so I'm just saying.
But yeah, you've got to create the environment, you see, for your success as a tracker. Somebody else might just have said, where is it at? A detective, the rangers may have come out and say, take us there, we're going to prosecute you with a felony. So they use coercion. They finally, oh, it's over here. Come get it. I was like, no, this is a tracking scenario. I'm gone. I'm on trail. Boom. Same thing one time, a big truck of oil truck is going through the park. He crashes into a tree. We come by. I pull up. Hey, what happened? Yeah, I fell asleep. So I went out and looked at the trail of him leaving the hardball with his vehicle and driving straight into the tree. And the rangers get there, and I said, come with me before you talk to him. If you were driving and you fell asleep and then you woke back up like he said, what would you do with your front wheels? Well, you'd try and turn back up on the road, which means where would the dirt fly? The transfer of the dirt from the wheel spinning, where would it go? All over there. Do you see any of that? No. That means he fell asleep and drove straight into the tree. End of story. Now go talk to him. So if you believe in tracking and your skills and you work on it daily to master this stuff and you put yourself to a standard and you know what that standard is and you can apply it, there is not anything that you can't do because every living thing has to touch the earth when it moves. Which means every scenario can use tracking in it. That's the truth. That's been my life. And I had a great career.
Once again, with tracking confidence. That's a whole other subject that I'm not sure anybody's ever touched on.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But that's how this stuff works. You know, we're creatures of habit, right? We build neural memories. People from the military and tactical community love to stay in tactical tracking world, right? The combat tracking world, because that's what they're good at. They're operators. So now they use tracking to close the distance with their quarry and to put the habeas gravis or to kill the enemy. Then you have the scientific side, the wildlife side, where you're looking at a lot of data and collecting data, trying to see animal populations and so forth on that side. So you've got all that. You've got those who are law enforcement who deal with investigations, and so they spend a lot of time using tracking or trying to use tracking to help their investigative case. And people, some cross bleed over into these other disciplines, and search and rescue, there's not a more noble cause to find people, whether they do it because they're unskilled in a rural environment, or there's mishaps, or there's skullduggery. You know, a lot of bad guys take their victims out to rural places. Why? Because there's no witnesses. And so, you know, searching for lost and missing people, this is a big deal, and it's so valuable. And trackers need to be able to understand behavior better, because that's what they're trying to read in the trail.
That's really freaking cool. That is really cool. So understanding the behavior by looking at the tracks is something we should be working on. You gave us a great exercise with, you know, having the person go out there and actually do different scenarios. Are there any other tips that you can think of to help us learn?
Well, I don't know if there's, I don't know if these are so much tips. I think you and I are having a tracking conversation about a lot of concepts, and my mind has to work with an end state. So you've got to think of what the end state would need to be of why you're even out on a trail in the first place. You know, I definitely, as a kid, have been on hundreds of animal trails, wildlife trails. And in the beginning, it was really the science of it. You're just, wow, there's a footprint. But pretty soon you start saying, what are they thinking about? Where are they going? What are they doing? And so if the end state is to want to know that, then why don't we set up training that provides that for our end state in training? I think we would do well to understand the concept of end state. What are we after? What is our ultimate goal? What are we trying to attain? Because without that, it'd be like a never-ending trail. I mean, how do we know what we're on, or when we should quit it, or when we should stop, or when the end state gives us that? When am I done?
Yeah.
You know, if that means you go out one day and say, I am trying to find an otter track, and then I want to follow that otter track to its den. Well, that's an end state. You know, I can make that statement, but at least it gives me validity that my mind needs scientifically to process. If I just say I'm just going to go out and track, well, I could, oh, look at this track, and then look at that track, and oh, wow, look at that track. If it's defined, but you still have to define it. I want to see as many different types of animal tracks as I possibly can out there today. Well, now you're going to log every...
Give yourself goals.
Go ahead. Well, you need to, or else when do you know that you're absolutely done? If your end state today is just to go out and have fun, and tracking is going to be the mode to your fun, then your end state is fun. Did you have fun today? Great.
Yeah.
If you're going to use that information that you glean out there for anything, you better be prepared to log it in, right? So observe it, classify it, interpret it, so that you're giving meaning to it, so that it can be useful at a further date.
Yes.
Because eventually, you're going to see so many of those that they'll all blend together and none of them will have meaning individually. The only thing that gives them meaning is all the time you spend collecting the data and logging it.
I see. That's good stuff. That's good stuff.
But I think we're all on the right track. Everyone that has skill, I will say this. You probably shouldn't start teaching tracking having only gone to a couple courses without spending a lot of time, you know, perfecting some of that. And teaching under somebody who has taught this stuff before as an assistant instructor or some form, because teaching is different than doing.
Yes. Yes. Yeah,
other than that,
spending those countless hours out there is mandatory. Yeah.
But, you know, I will tell you this, though. If somebody came to me and said, this is why I like the Government Tracker Standards program that I've gleaned from the government and now I have in my system. If somebody came to me and said, here's my logbook, I've been tracked for the last 15 years, five of it just on my own, but here's all the data, this is all the stuff I was doing. I joined the search and rescue group, and I've been on, you know, 30 different missions. They're all logged in here. You know, successful on this many. These ones, can you kind of see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
I would be like, listen, man, you really need to challenge this government tracker standard. Put your skills out there, and let's see where you are objectively to a high standard, and just see. And I would take someone like that. I would lay the trails out there based on these scenarios, examine the spoor detail, but they would also deal with these scenarios. They would have to meet all these things. But when they were done, arduous, no doubt. But when they were done, they would validate for themselves that they did it themselves to a standard that wasn't their own and say, wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
And all the accolades that come with that, I think, and every tracking organization, as far as teachers, have their own standard for that. But there's not one out there, like, I mean, unless I go train in a school underneath a particular person, I can't be really evaluated by their system, right? It's only when it turns government that you can. You know, Rob Speed has done a lot of work out there in Virginia with their search and rescue, and they've built a state standard that's accepted by their state now on what a search and rescue tracker's ability should be in that state. Well, I'm telling you, those search and rescue trackers in that state, I would bet if I ran testing on search and rescue trackers from other states, and search and rescue trackers from that state, I would, you know, this is where the art comes in. I would bet that my data would support, this is a hypothesis, my data would support that those search and rescue trackers in Virginia, because they can't track in search and rescue without meeting their standard.
Wow.
I bet you that they would have a better grasp of meeting a tracking standard skill than those who did not have it. That
yes,
just
sir.
Went to courses. And I think that that's important. Whether it's done at the state level, whether it's done at the national level, whether it's done... Now, I've taken the one that I have from the United States Marshal Service. So I have that one. But somebody could come to me from any tracking school in this country and say, I want to take this man tracking test. Okay. They don't have to train with me to do it. This is objective tracking with looking at trails. It's all laid out. Written test, everything, right? When you're done, you know that you did this yourself. I don't say, well, you haven't trained with me for the last, you know, 10 courses, so you can't take this test. I think that's important. I think it's important that that's the next level, that we all need to put our egos away, and we need to collectively...
Okay.
Collectively have a national standard, and it doesn't matter what one it is.
Right.
But it's a national standard that can be applied. I have this government tracker one only because that's my experience. I've applied this to hundreds of trackers over the last, you know, 15 years, and so it's the one that I know. But
right.
Heavens, if we could have a national one that anybody could go to, it's kind of like a bar. Every state has a bar that you have to pass.
Yeah.
You go to another state, you have to pass the bar. I'm telling you what, if you know how to track, you're not worried about putting your skills on the line because you do that every day anyways if you got called out. If I have to search for, you know, a woman who's lost in the mountains, I've got to, well, I'm putting my tracking on the line. I would rather know that I applied it to a standard, and this is the standard that I'm at because I was tested, and this is where I'm at, and this is my skill level. As opposed to it just being a peering process.
Yes,
because
sir.
That's subjective. You know, that's subjective, which I, as a scientist, I don't agree with.
Ty, we are almost out of time. I was wondering if
okay,
you had
bro.
Any parting thoughts to share with the future.
Well, I hope to see people out there. I hope people, until we do have a national standard, I hope some man trackers out there will get a hold of me and say, I'd like to take that test.
Yes,
I'd like to see where I'm at based on, you know, this government tracker standard. And I have everything that any, you know, there's cool patch that says I reached this standard. You know, we all have to have those in our life, you know.
Yeah.
That's how our minds work. You know, we put forth effort, we want something for it, which is not, that's not a bad thing. We just need to put it in context and understand what it's for and then be able to. You know, when I look at someone else and they're wearing a tactical tracker patch on their arm, I know what they stand for, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they're good. They're armed. They're hunting down somebody, and they use tracking to get it done. And outstanding.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's good. So when someone sees me with a government tracker, you know, on mine, they're going to ask, what the heck is that? I'm going to have to point them to the standard and say, there it is. That's what it is.
Go check it out. Yeah.
You know? But I'm hoping that we unify a little bit more behind that particular kind of a concept. And when that happens, like I said, it may be 50 years from now, 100 years from now, I think science needs to drive it so that not only within our community, our tracking community, that we accept it, but what's more important in science is that other sciences look at it and say it's a science.
Yes, sir.
That's important.
Yes, sir.
That is super important. And if we can't do that, if I just told another scientist, let's say I've done some cross work with ichnologists, right? They're dealing with trace fossils. I helped co-author a paper for a big journal. And if I'm not showing scientific methods in my approach to that other science, they're not gonna talk to me.
Right.
You know, they need to see that I'm speaking, even though we may have our own particular language that's unique to us, it's still based on a scientific method. And then when other scientists look and say, wow, yeah, that's a good science, I'm telling you, the animal tracking world, I believe, is so far ahead of the man tracking world in this department. Liebenberg, Elbrock, I mean, these guys have got it wired tight.
Yes.
And I looked extensively at their certification process as one of the ones, and a lot of this government tracker model is based off of that animal tracking model, but of course,
good.
For man.
Good.
So, and I think because they have it right as far as the science side of it. And I think that we have a long way to go on the man tracking side. But you know what? I can't change that I'm a scientist. I am who I am. I can't
That's
change
okay.
that I was.
That's okay. I mean, you've done some incredible work. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, bro.
Well, I don't think so. I think I'm relevant to who I am and what approach I take.
Hell yeah.
I do believe, though, that's where it needs to go. As long as we stay islands, I'll respect someone else's island. I mean, I'll see all these great trackers and go, yeah, they're great trackers. I've seen them. I know who they are. They're good trackers. But until we actually have a standard that we all look at and send our trackers to this standard to say, yeah, you've been trained. Now go test yourself.
Yeah.
Until we do that, like the wildlife trackers have done.
Yeah.
Until we do that, I don't see us progressing much further than we've already attained.
Well, that's definitely food for thought. I really want to thank Ty. Thank you, Ty.
You bet.
I want to Ty Cunningham for being on our show. And we will definitely have Ty on again because he has a lot of knowledge to share. I appreciate you, Ty.
Hey, no, thanks for having me. I appreciate the time that you spent with me tonight. I do honor this time. Thank you.
Hey, we'll have you on again soon. Everybody, have a good night. Bye, Ty.
Bye.